So yes, all the threats that the mind expects to encounter are external threats, because when the mind was basically formatted, when we last genetically really radically changed, was some 40,000 years ago with the extinction of the Cro-Mags. That was the last time there was significant change in the structure of the brain. So the brain is set up to survive in a world that's filled with endless dangers. At the time, there were you could die very quickly for any number of reasons. You could be attacked by another tribe or wild animals. There might be a shortage of food. There might be disease. There was the human lifespan wasn't even 20 years of age when the brain structures that we still work with were locked into place. So consequently, we have in our brains very powerful fear and craving centers. They're known as the amygdala and the hypothalamus, and they're all preconscious. They're much faster. They get information much quicker than the conscious mind does, and they make decisions much faster than we become consciously aware of things. For example, the amygdala also and the hypothalamus are very stupid. They often make mistakes. I'll give you an example. They look for things that in the past have caused the stress and suffering, and then anything that reminds them of a fearful or a positive thing, they will jump at. For example, if you're walking in the woods and you see a stick, you might jump thinking, oh my God, it's a snake. Or you might, if you've been in a war and you hear a truck backfiring, you might hit the ground, your body telling you that there's incoming fire coming. Very often, rape victims go into freeze positions during later on in their lives during intimate, very safe encounters, because the position or the situation reminds their amygdala of the time when they were raped. So the mind, understandably, is looking all the time for things that remind it of uncomfortable things that happened in the past. The problem is that the planet now is infinitely safer than it was when the brain was set up. There really aren't anywhere near the amount of external threats occurring that warrant the kind of fear and over-attention and hyper-coding that happens. I'll give you an example of how the mind creates our suffering. What generally happens is we blame our stress and our discomfort on the world around us. For example, you might, in the course of a day, wake up and somebody might have left their towels on the floor, a roommate or somebody that you live with might be sloppy. Then you get to the subway and perhaps somebody's blocking the subway door or subway entrance. You might then go to work and somebody who is very demanding might suddenly show up and ask something of you that you're unprepared for. There might be, you might order some food at lunch and find that it doesn't taste the way you want. Now, some days, all these events will pass and you won't have any reaction to them. On other days, any one of these events could trigger an enormous amount of thought and a sense of victimization. Why are these assholes blocking the subway? Why doesn't my roommate pick up the towels? Why does this person always show up at work? Why does I can't find any good food, etc.? So all these irritating little events are always happening throughout the day, or things that, as the Buddha said, they're inevitable. Not getting what we want is one of the inevitable events that's going to occur every day in many, many shapes. Sometimes we react and other times we don't react. Why? Why is because underlying our awareness there is this what's known as baseline stress. We are physically tense, or we're not physically tense. The Buddha called this Vedana. Scientists, especially people who study stress levels, call it baseline stress. And basically the idea is we carry around a lot of stories about how much we have to do, how we're under the gun, how many responsibilities we have, how much the rent is, what's going to happen in the future. So we have these stories, and they create an enormous amount of ambient stress. But then on top of it, we have the amygdala and the hypothalamus also reacting to everything it sees, going, oh, that person reminds me of a teacher I didn't like in high school. I don't like that person. Oh, that person looks like my ex-girlfriend. I like that person. Whatever. So on top of all these ambient stories that create physical stress, we have beneath the surface as well this buildup of aversion and craving. Vedana, as the Buddha called it. And this underlying amount of stress determines when we snap and when we don't snap. When we become bent out of shape, worked up, when we blow our tops, and when we just take things in stride. It's largely unconscious, this baseline stress. When scientists measure it, there's actually a way to measure the baseline stress in the body. And baseline stress, by the way, can cause all sorts of, not only interpersonal and deleterious problems in our lives, but it also has severe health effects. There's lots of indications that everything from cardiovascular disease to ulcers, peptic ulcers, to arterial sclerosis, some forms of rheumatoid arthritis, etc. Even the possibility that some forms of cancers might be exacerbated by underlying stress. So it's actually a very real issue. But the problem is we're not aware of it. And we don't like the idea that there's something largely unconscious going on beneath the surface of our awareness, determining how we perceive the world, determining when we're relaxed, determining when we're worked up and anxious, determining when we are friendly. We don't like that idea. Why don't we like it? Because nobody likes to think that their perceptions of the world are skewed. We all like to think that we're very objective. We all like to think that we've got a good handle, and to acknowledge that there's a subjective underpinning to our experience is very threatening to us most of the time. So we develop all of our coping strategies to defend ourselves from the world, not realizing that the bulk of our suffering and stress is actually caused largely by undercurrents of stress that we have imposed on ourselves through the stories we tell and just through the workings of the mind. We just are unaware of it, so we blame the world. We blame the person who leaves the towels on the floor, the people who stand in front of the subway, the person at work. We blame the world for the stress or the suffering that we feel, the sense of dissatisfaction and discomfort. So we're basically building our walls in the wrong places. As one monk puts it, the enemies are behind the gates. We've installed our walls between us often and everyone else. We avoid people we don't like. We run away from interpersonal confrontations we don't want to go through. We often exaggerate to get the attention we need. We compete for happiness in the world. We compete. We get jealous over other people's successes. There's this sense of it's me against everybody else, and I have to protect myself primarily from you. The real enemy isn't you. It's inside my mind. It's behind the gates that I have erected. The enemy is behind the gates. And so the coping strategies that worked in childhood, because people let us get away with them, they let us get away with our tantrums, they let us get away with running to our rooms or avoiding situations we don't like. They eventually tire when we make demands over and over again, or when we become overworked up by small things or lose our ability to tolerate the inevitable discomforts in life. Whatever it is, as children, very often these coping strategies work, and then we carry them into our adult life, this constantly feeling that my security involves keeping you controlled, you safely at bay, me removed, me with more resources, me with more stuff, me with whatever. So this idea is that I've got to erect my protection between me and you. And that's not where the problems that cause the real stress are anymore. The world is not the place where people are endlessly going to kill us in any given moment, like it was when the brain was first set up. Is there any way somebody could see if the lights could go on? Just see if, right by the bowl, there's a light. So see if you can turn it. And have we lost the lights entirely? Oh, there we go. I felt like I was living in those times 47 years ago. You were all gradually descending into darkness, and I was... Well, that is better. Thank you. So, yeah, because we're protecting ourselves from imaginary enemies outside, we start creating all these unskillful habits. I just made a couple of notes. We're constantly envy and competitive. We're avoiding people. We're trying to read people's minds, hypervigilance, and figure out what they think about us. We worry about how much money we have because we believe our security will come from that. And very often we carry around self-centered stories of how everything is happening to me. Why me? Why do I have to be the one? Why is this happening? Why is everybody expecting this from me? So again, that keeps us walled up. Now luckily, the Buddha offered a lot of tools that help us build protection for the real places we can find happiness and give us a sense of protection from the parts of the mind or the mind's committee that are unskillful. In other words, we need to fortify the parts of the mind that are skillful and keep it safe from the parts of the mind that cause stress, worry, and fear, and would have us always in a state of anxiety, would have us always worked up, have us always anxious, have us always believing that there's something wrong with the present, that would have us always feeling unsafe. We always wind up feeling unsafe because we're, again, protecting ourselves from other people. When the real, as the Buddha referred to it, he said, he called these underlying defilements, he called them the enemies, basically. They're not going to go away. They're always going to be there, but we can work skillfully in a way so that we don't have to cede control of the mind to these voices inside of it. What are the voices that the Buddha called the defilements? They're the stories of, you know, why me, taking everything personally, not seeing that old age, sickness, death, discomforts, pain, not getting what we want, getting dumped, getting rejected, getting fired, losing our jobs. All these things happen to everybody sooner or later. The suffering in the world is not original to any of us. So there's that. There's anger that we carry around. There's the craving for short-term sensual pleasures that make us feel good in the short term, things like drugs and food and excessive amounts of food or just buying our way out of stress. All these different things that work in the short term and make us feel good for a few moments, make us feel safe and relaxed for a few moments, and then we're back again feeling vulnerable. There's the underlying physical agitation of vedana, of stress, and then there's the sense of craving that comes from when we've addicted ourselves to something and we want more and more and more of it. And then there's just, the Buddha said, that bias of believing that all of our problems come from out there, that makes us fall into the primary, the Buddha called this the foundational ignorance. This belief that all of my suffering comes from you, that I don't have a role in it, that I'm not the author of my happiness, that I'm not the author of my suffering, that it's coming from outside. So this is the sort of core underlying themes. And the Buddha offered the following. He said, the first thing you need is you need to surround yourself with a few other spiritual practitioners to see that there is a way other than the normal way that people live and try to find security by accumulation, by materialism, by competitiveness and envy and egotism and whatever, that there's other ways. Nobody's asking you to give up all those things, but we are asking for a balance in life. A balance, a rebalancing, of finding happiness within. Most of us rarely try. And if we do try, we try only for a short period of the time that we're alive to find our sense of peace and our sense of security by working with the breath, the body sensations, working with skillful thoughts, working with benevolent attitudes such as generosity and gratitude. So the Buddha said first, the first skill to acquire is just hanging out with other skillful people, with people who are trying to live a spiritual life. When you see that it's safe to do it, that those people are not being attacked by wild boars or being impaled because they've taken up the spiritual life. Although in the Pali Canon there are a couple of incidences where people would get enlightened and run over by wild cows and killed instantly. But that rarely happens in my experience. We've yet to lose anyone in Dharma punks to wild boars or elephants. But I suppose it could happen. But generally if you hang around other spiritual people, you see that rather than winding up in hospitals or in detoxes or in rehabs, most spiritual people actually tend to do pretty well. They tend to be happy and healthy, and they tend to be very peaceful. So you hang around first. The second thing the Buddha said to cultivate is a sense of mindfulness of what's going on in the body. This keeps us from immediately blaming the person that we're with for the fact that we're unhappy. Very often, we bring into an interpersonal situation underlying stress accumulated throughout the day. And then the person says one little thing that we disagree with, and suddenly we're amazed by the shit that's coming out of our mouth. Oh my God, you son of a bitch! How could you say that the Kinks were not a great band? You idiot, you moron, what is going on? How can you say that Inception was a good film? It's the worst piece of garbage I've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. Actually, I really didn't like the film, but you can like it if you want. So anyway, we bring this underlying physical stress and tension. And if we practice mindfulness of being aware of what's going on in the body, when we enter into interpersonal situations, we have a chance to say, oh, you know what? I was pretty stressed out before this conversation began. Maybe it's not what they're saying. Maybe it's actually I'm bringing a lot of the tension here. Maybe I'm bringing the combativeness. Maybe I'm bringing the sense of confrontation. Or maybe it's at least partially me. And if it's partially me, if I stop, if I refuse to tango, there won't be any dance, there won't be any fight, there won't be any confrontation. Because it always takes two people to create a confrontation. So if we notice what's going on, we feel that area in the body that gets tense and tight and become aware of it, and then use the third skill, which is the ability to relax the body through the concentration and working with the breath, if we cultivate this ability to relax the body and develop an inner peace, we'll be much less likely to have a confrontation or feel that we're being victimized by the world around us. So again, the first three skills are hang around people that are trying to live a skillful life, become aware of what's going on inside of you, see what kind of gut feelings or what kind of tensions are going on. Notice before an interaction if you're filled with stories in your head, if you're filled with a sense of too many responsibilities and your mind is just feeling claustrophobic and filled up with thoughts. That's something also to be aware of. And then three, if you notice any of those things, then begin to relax the body. Four, the Buddha said it's very important to cultivate a sense of patience, a sense of patient tolerance, which is understanding that most of the discomforts in life that we feel are actually caused by, again, the amygdala, which releases hormones and peptides, which then contract the body, make us feel tense, and then make us explode at the people around us. If we're patient, generally hormones will pass in about 15 minutes. That's how long it takes hormones to generally deplete. If we don't keep re-triggering them with our thoughts, hormones will eventually pass. That's why a panic attack, if you start breathing and you don't think the thoughts, generally will last for about 15 to 20 minutes before it'll begin to subside, because that's how long the hormones are lasting in the body that have been triggered by the amygdala. So have a sense of patience, a sense of, okay, right now I feel like there's something terribly wrong, like I'm under attack. My entire body is contracted and my mind is filled with angry thoughts and the world feels very small and I can't get any peace. But if we cultivate a sense of patience and a sense of tolerance, at least see if we still feel the same way 15 minutes if we put down the thoughts and give the hormones a chance to pass. The other three, I'm going to just talk about two of them, actually. Gratitude. It's very important to cultivate, when at least if we can, on a regular practice, of reflecting on the skillful things that we've done, reflecting the fact that our life is not, that we're not living in a place of scarcity, that we in fact have much greater abundance than most humans had for millennia. That we actually have all the requisites the Buddha said we needed to be happy. We have generally clothes. I don't see anybody who's... you're welcome to come. No, you're not welcome to come naked. Take it back. You're definitely not welcome to come naked. Scantily dressed might be not welcome either. But appropriately dressed. But we all have enough clothes. We all have, generally, we have shelter. We have the medicine that we need. If we don't, then that's a problem. But we have most of the requisites that the Buddha said that we needed to be happy. So this sense of gratitude and this sense of reflecting on the skillful things that we've done to help others, and to take away the focus from competing with others, this idea that your happiness comes at my expense and my happiness comes from your expense, gets undermined when we don't come at the world from a place of, I'm missing something. There's something I don't have. When I come at you from that place, I'm so much more likely to become competitive and envious and get into an unskillful interaction with you. And finally, that sense of wisdom, that accumulated knowledge that happens over the course of our spiritual practice, to again and again remember that even if I can't find the source of what's causing me suffering immediately, it could be an underlying physical stress. It could be unskillful thoughts that I've been carrying around. It could be something that I've done in the past. Karma works that way. There could be, I've in my life seen myself act unskillfully, and then days pass and then I'll notice myself being off and being out of kilter with people. And it takes a while to get a sense of realizing where, what it is that I've changed that's adding more stress and more discomfort into my life. But that sense of wisdom is reminding ourselves again and again and again, rather than go to the easy thing to blame, which is blaming the people around us all the time, blaming the conditions all the time first. At least consider the possibility that part of the suffering and the stress, and the only part that I have control over, in fact, is coming from within. And to bring that sense of inquisitiveness, rather than to focus on what you're doing and how I can change you and control you and make you to be the person I think you should be, instead to bring the awareness within, practicing thoughts that are skillful, like gratitude, generosity, a sense of goodwill, and a sense of equanimity, knowing when I've given all I can and it's time for me to bring my awareness back within. All of these attributes will plant the seeds for lasting happiness. Next week, I'm going to talk about how this teaching works with social anxiety. The Buddha had a lot to say about social anxiety, why we feel anxious, and what we can do when we're in anxious situations. It's a continuation of tonight's. So I hope that you got something from tonight's talk. Thank you for listening, and now it's your turn to ask any questions or share anything that comes to mind. So thanks. All the way in the back.
I've heard you talking a lot about like really looking inside.